Hello and welcome to Elite Cadre, the Hordes and War Machine podcast that's regularly distracted by shiny things. I'm Mike.
I'm Alex.
I'm Kurt.
And I'm Nick.
This week we'll be looking at an utter hodgepodge of news, meandering aimlessly through random bits of our current gaming life, taking a look at a warlock in the triumphant return of spelling it out, and then mocking Nick again when we get to the painting table.
Oh, sounds fun.
Well, it always is. You know, it's a regular thing.
I have a brush in my hand right now, you know.
Are you sweeping up?
I was going to suggest painting the wall, but I like your suggestion better.
Getting BBs out of my shoes, I think.
Should we move on?
Quickly, please.
Wow, we're barely 5 minutes in and we've already got to this stage. First up, we shall have some news.
News.
Yes.
We need a theme tune for the news.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's the news. It's
the news.
News
is here.
I tell you what, I'll go to our licensed music supplier.
No, I like singing.
And then go, I can't afford anything.
Go with the singing.
First up, let's have a look at the Circle Griffin, which...
Ooh, it's lovely.
We saw it in a case at Adepticon.
Yes.
It looks quite nice. Yeah, I'm not going to lie, it's a nice little model. Bit blurry from the photos, but...
Well, the model's a bit blurry.
Yes, in real life.
Is it so fast?
It's actually supplied with its own pot of Vaseline. Although where you're going to take that one is up to you.
No, we're good.
Yes, exactly. I quite like it. The wings are somewhere where you're going to see talented painters really go to town, I think.
I'm seeing some oranges and reds and yellows.
But you're colourblind, Kurt.
It's in the imagination.
Ah, fair enough. Mm. Alex,
I'm quite excited for the Griffin. I think it should be quite good. That's a new element to the Circle Wall Brass as well. It should be quite good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
What you mean is it adds the similar sort of shenanigans to what Legion have?
Yeah, pretty much.
Does it have slipstream?
No.
I thought he was really bent for a second. I was like, oh, remember the rules. Legion shenanigans. Oh, shit, slipstream. Oh,
no, yeah. I was thinking more flight.
Flight's not.
Although it does have the double control area, and I can't remember the animus.
If trolls had a huge great troll that had slipstream, but not because it dragged things along through the air, just because it bent the earth and things slurped downhill.
You'd assume the Gargantuans would have an animus. That might be.
That was my thought. I was just thinking. I wonder if the Gargantuans have an animus. Can you imagine the Mountain King with slipstream?
Yeah, it's perfect for him. That's kind of what I was thinking.
Well, then again, he can't be placed, can he? If he follows the same rules as the Colossals,
he can't. It's pull everyone else.
Models within two inches
get dragged along as the Earth gets bowed.
Before we move too far in that direction, because, you know, I want to save the Mountain King up for a bit later in the news.
We saw the Mountain King.
Let's go through some of the less exciting news first.
Griffin.
Let's move on to the Menoth B Chassis Jack.
Whoa!
Where's Dave Payton when you want to talk to him?
How dare you, sir? I quite like them.
The Castigator was always going to change because it had that metal piping for a start, so that was definitely one of the things that was going to go.
Yeah, and also if you've ever assembled one, it kind of doesn't go together. It all kind of gets a bit wonky out of kind of... it was always going to look a bit different. In plastic.
Yeah.
It's good. I like it.
They do seem to be sort of a bit bigger, a bit chunkier. I don't know exactly what changes have been made to the Reckoner. I'm not totally up on you.
Some people are complaining about it, but I like it. I don't see anything wrong with it.
It's essentially the same. It's just a bit more chunky and the arms are a bit more sort of broader, and yeah, I like it. I've got two. Do I want a third one? Maybe.
You always need three Reckoners. The only thing I would say is I'm not quite sure on the head. Something about it, maybe it's the way it's painted, doesn't quite look right. But I think when we see it in person, it'll look a bit better. Go on.
Didn't realise Reckoners were like bombers. You needed three.
Oh, no.
I've heard that, yeah.
The thing is with Reckoners, you can never have too many Reckoners.
That is like bombers, in fairness.
Yeah.
Except they're a bit cheaper.
Yeah. And possibly better.
Out, sir. Out. True, though.
They are the Jack that Menoth never leaves home without. Seriously. Just. Anyway, we do have the new Jack amongst them, which is the Sanctifier. Which, they took a very odd step with the actual painting of the studio model, in that it's not at all like the concept art.
Oh?
Because they've done that sort of black and gold thing for the Sanctifier.
But that's what the high reclaiming case, the reclaiming case has been, and the Sanctifier is a reclaimer Jack.
Yeah, I seem to remember in the actual book it's cream. In the actual art.
I thought
art.
In High Reclaimer himself's always been black as well in the studio painted version.
No, I mean as in the actual Sanctifier in the book.
Oh, I don't remember.
No, I'm pretty sure it's black.
I could reach over and get Prime.
Prime
Wrath,
might not be
but
much
it's
help.
Like, it's all the way over there.
Mine's oh, poor baby. You're so lazy.
No one said I had to work in this podcast. Come on.
We at least expect you to turn up. Not just, you know, half attend.
Sorry, what?
You see what I have to work with.
It's not work. You enjoy
it.
It's
a Batman reference.
Oh, actually, looking it up, yes, you're right. It is indeed black. I'm mistaken.
Thank you very much.
So, however, it doesn't have the Menifex on the side in the art. So it is different. It's also it's also a bit chunkier.
I think that's something they've sort of added with all the plastic kits, because all three of them have that Menifex there.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them now, rather than having the old ones, had the symbols moulded on. But for some reason, they seem to have taken that out for the plastic sculpts. I'm a bit of a loss as to why. But
could well be to do with the casting process.
It could. But then again, we've seen them do small and fiddly details, and making a raised bit on that kind of surface shouldn't cause too much of a problem, but, that they know better than we do. So, yeah.
It may all be a design choice.
But it's a point taken. It does allow for a much bigger surface for painters.
It may all be a premonition that there's a carriage jack coming that will have a part inserted on there.
That is a good point.
It may well not be a premonition that there's a carriage jack that may have a part inserted there.
Well, yeah. It could literally mean anything.
You're just messing with our minds, man.
Yeah, they maybe are. Yeah.
Anyway. So we've discussed...
A badger with a spoon.
We've discussed the Menoth jacks. So how about the Signar B chassis ones?
Move on.
Yep.
Wow. Really?
No, that was the Signar player. That's as positive as it gets.
They're okay.
I like them. I like the two jacks that were released previous, the Hammersmith and the Centurion, and the cracking models, and I think these are a good improvement on those models. I think there's a problem with the posability and kind of the, well, obviously a lot of the metal jacks. I didn't like particularly like the pose on the Centurion. The legs were a bit naff in my eye. So
they seem to have done what the Kador ones did and sort of straightened up a bit and then standing up rather than really squatting and hunkering down.
It's nice that the Centurion spear is like the proper length now.
The Centurion is definitely an improvement, I think. The shield itself looks a little bit different and looks better for it, I think. But from someone who owns seven Hammersmiths, I'm not a huge fan of the plastic Hammersmith at all.
However, you may well be able to build these ones.
That's true.
If you've got seven already, I don't think it really matters, does it?
And the Avenger, I didn't realise it was an Avenger at first. I sort of half glanced at it and went, oh, it's a Stormcloud, moved on, and then went, oh wait, the sword's very slightly different, what? And then realised it's
a
good model.
And it's not red.
Not red.
Uh-huh. What?
Anyway.
I think that's an in-joke that even two of the hosts don't get.
Yeah.
I just thought of it.
Moving swiftly on.
Yes. God, literally miles an hour. So Signar B chassis jacks, they're okay. You know, I think like most of the transitions to plastic, it's like, well, it looks vaguely like the same jack.
If you look at the shoulder pads on the Hammersmith, and if you look at the shoulder pads on the other two, they aren't the same, are they?
No.
So do you think you might be able to change, because all the other pieces, the shoulders have been separate pieces themselves. Do you think they're going to be interchangeable?
They could possibly be. We don't know. It's going to be one of these things we won't know until we see the unboxing in a kit.
That's true, yeah.
So
just something interesting to sort of think about.
It is something that's, I would say it's interesting to point out, but I'd be stretching the truth if I'm honest.
You'd also be complimenting Nick.
Yeah, and that just can't happen.
Anyway, what's next on this deluge of news?
Deluge of news. We have the cross-eyed Winter Argus.
It's not bee, cross-eyed. It's not cross-eyed. The bee just fell off his nose.
Yes, bee, exactly what it is. To be honest, I am puzzled by the existence of this model. I really am. I don't see why it exists, because it's just an Argus again.
Painted with an armor buff. With an armor buff Animus. Next.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we covered it when we did Domination, didn't we? And we kind of said that it was a bit.
No, I think we merrily skipped around the existence of the Winter Argus.
Yeah.
It looks like the other Argus. Can you not just paint another Argus white? What happens if you paint
it
the same
colour? It doesn't look like the and I don't think it does look like the other Argus. I think the other Argus are more kind of dog-like, and that's more wolf-like, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I get where you're coming from. I just don't think it looks significantly different enough. If someone painted the Winter Argus brown, you'd go, that's an Argus. If someone painted the normal Argus white, you'd go, that's a Winter Argus.
A skinny Winter Argus.
It's one of these things. It just doesn't particularly work for me. I think there's more they could have done with that model, and whether it's the sculptor or whether it's more likely the brief they gave them.
Yeah,
I know one person who's definitely going to buy it. Conrad.
Yeah,
because many Argus.
I just could run them with the butcher.
Anyway.
I think I'll pick one up for completeness. I think I don't know if I'll get much use, but I will definitely pick one up.
I think we all have those models that we pick them up for a faction and then sit there years later going, why did I buy this? Why do I own the Kador field gun?
You played it once.
I played it several times. I played it with Zakova.
I remember that tournament. Okay. Yeah. Can you not just shoot Nemo? No, it doesn't have enough range. Aww.
I did try and shoot Nemo with it. Missed every single time. Moving on, we have the Succubus.
Hey, have you seen a doctor?
Ba-dum-tsh.
I think you need to see more than a doctor for a Succubus. How'd you get out of the bedroom in the first place?
All right, let's move on. It's a four-armed legion armored thing.
And a black pant.
Any comments?
It's not bad again. It's a nice model. Its breasts are less pneumatic than in the artwork.
Finally, a sane comment.
I like it. I like the Succubus. And you know it's going to hit the table in one of every list. So,
yeah.
One of every list. One of every player's lists. So it's going to be there.
It's not a character, is it?
Oh, no, it's not. So maybe in every list if some Legion players get their way.
Yeah. It's all right. I don't think it's particularly good or particularly bad. It's kind of just there.
It's crying out for a fishtail.
You want to name it Ariel and give it to one of your little girls?
No, I don't go there. Thank you so much. She'd love that far too much.
Anyway. Should we move on to the bigger news?
Yeah, why not?
We've seen the Mountain King, the troll gargantuan. All right, Kurt, calm down.
Yeah, you can tell Kurt and Nick are somewhat excited about it.
No, really?
Yes.
I mean, for me, it's a nice model, but it's kind of very similar to Mulg.
Yeah.
Just without
it's a big
stick.
Troll. What did you expect? It's
yeah,
a big troll.
It's
like
big
a big
troll. Rock on its back. And it just...
It's a good job you don't play trolls then, isn't it, really, to be honest? Because I'm overjoyed with the fact that it's a bigger version of Mulg with some rocks on its back. And I'm just perfect.
As am I.
It's just like, fantastic. More, please.
if the job description was big troll, it is big troll. Job done. And I mean, some people were saying, oh, it's just a bigger Morgue sculpt. It's, if you start to look at the intricate detailing on it, there's so many little things going on that the sculptor just gone crazy with that it's, I can't wait. I really can't wait.
It is a gorgeous model. I mean, the, like you say, the level of detail they've gone to and, you know, the welts that are kind of crawling out the skin. And I mean, there's lots to look at there. You're going to kind of pick it up and you couldn't come to paint it. And every time you kind of pick up the brush, notice something different that you didn't before. It's sort of one of those models that has lots of intricacies in there.
It's fantastic.
It is.
It's just amazing.
As I posted on TWF, the temptation to field two of them, so Grisel Bloodsong and the Mountain Kings.
I don't know.
Awesome bad name.
It is quite good, actually, yeah. But having assembled and painted a war wagon and gone through the pain that is something of that size, I'm not going to want to paint two of those. I'd be very surprised if I get that far.
That's the point where you're going to have to buy an airbrush.
Yes.
Well, that's the point where you can justify an airbrush.
It's just the detailing even afterwards, though. You can get past that bit, even with spray cans, but it's the, I don't know.
Don't worry, Kurt. Just buy several tins of dip, pour them all into one larger tin,
called my bath.
Then dip the whole thing at once.
No, my name's Kurt, not Kev.
Okay.
Small distinction. It looks awesome, and I'm definitely going to get at least one. And then probably die if I try and paint it white.
Hopefully. Oh god, I'll be no Mountain King.
I probably will not be doing that, although I may change my mind quite drastically.
So you'll assemble it one evening and I'll just sneak into the house and while you're sleeping, undercoat the whole thing black.
Oh, that's just me.
Hey, I had to do it with Widowmakers, you're going to do it with something much, much bigger. It would make the rock easier to paint.
That's true.
It wouldn't. Oh, it would. Yeah, it would, because the rock's really dark on my trolls. Yeah, it's true. And most of it is rock, so yeah, that's not a bad idea.
See, and this is why you need the airbrush, because then you can do the rocks airbrush dark, the skin airbrush a much lighter tone. See, it's all working out for you here, Kurt.
Sorry, were you still talking? No, I'm not doing that.
Let's move on, shall we?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a lovely model. I'm looking for. I'm wondering where the ranged attacks are going to come from, because I can't see any.
I don't think it'll have one. I think
it's going to be a spray of welts.
I did wonder if it has some kind of spray. I wonder if it has some kind of slamming spray where it punches the ground and you get a spray template.
Your troll players, you should know this one. Welp grenades.
They're not going to be very. They're not going to be very destructive, though, are they?
I think literally he's going to open his mouth and it'll be a spray of welts.
Or it'll be a Karchev style smack the ground with his fist, 10-inch spray. That could be quite cool.
I spent
so long when I was building Karchev thinking, where the hell is the ranged weapon? Took me ages to actually figure out where that spray was.
It's a huge spray. Massive. Mahusive.
Hopefully, I can get one of these early. Hopefully.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been negotiating with people who may be going to American conventions and if it's out, and they're like, yes, if it's out, we will come to some agreement.
Well, what you want is the September, people are going to bring one back, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I'll just wait. Because the other option is to get somebody to buy it over there in the States. We've still got to ship it. I don't fancy shipping that across
from
the US.
True. I've just had some pain with shipping with my Fool's Trays. Matt sorted all out.
You bought them, did you?
Yeah, I bought Fool's Trays for Masters, some stacking ones. The actual shipping from Fool's was insane. Yeah. And Matt basically went, right, if we do it together and go through a reshipper, it's going to cost like 15 quid each. And I went, yeah, that sounds reasonable.
I have a tray from IKEA.
Someone posted one on Twitter earlier, which is baking trays and cake holders. That was amazing.
That works.
Yeah, it's a good idea. But I think one thing to kind of, and we'll kind of come across in a bit, we're going to talk about, obviously, our gaming before Masters, but one piece of advice I would offer to someone who's thinking of going to the UK Masters with a tray is don't. For the simple reason that you've got three lists. Yep. If you're going to have a tray, you're going to maybe want to put all three lists on the tray.
Yeah.
At Masters, there will be nowhere to put your army other than the floor under the board.
That actually is a valid point.
and the amount of models that I kicked over and broke, or not necessarily me, somebody else walking past, or you moved your chair.
It wasn't always me.
Well, it wasn't always you, know, but it's, I would advise against trays for Masters. I would normally strongly recommend four trays at a tournament, but on Masters, where the room is going to be tight, you're not going to have a lot of space.
And you've got 350-point lists that you have to use.
Yeah, I would strongly recommend about just sticking it all back in your case between games. It may take a little bit longer, but just get it done, keep them safe.
See, I did that last year, and so this year I was actually planning on just bringing the trays and not the bag, but, you know...
No, I'm with Alex on that. I learned maybe, that last
but
with the tray.
If you've got the stacking full trays, you might be okay, because you can kind of put stuff on the lower layer, but I'd be apprehensive about it.
Fair enough.
It's going to be one of those, you're going to have to see at the venue there, because we don't know how much space there is for Masters this year. Exactly the same.
Yep. Same area, same place.
A few more people.
Yeah.
I know, it's the same level, isn't it?
It's going to go to 128.
It's about 8 people more.
Try 20.
Well, okay, last year had 120 tickets available, but it didn't sell all 120.
109
finished. The delay between the things. It was 109 finished at the day, yeah.
There were also some dropouts and...
Yeah, people got hit by doors and stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. I think that's going to have to be something you have to decide for yourself on the day, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, moving on from discussion of trays, which was not news.
yeah.
Just, you know, well, I thought I'd try and bring it back on topic. I realise, you know, we don't have much of one. But hey, it's Vlad on a horse.
Woohoo! He's Vlad on a horse.
It looks lovely.
He's headless.
It is nice.
I will take one now, please.
He's headless Vlad on a horse, isn't he?
Could be.
No.
You told me the head was optional. I'm sure you did.
Well, for this one, there are, bizarrely, from what we've seen of the actual model, two head options. One with a crown or helmet, and the other one without. Which is, well, it's different. I think this is actually the first Vlad sculpt of any of them that I've liked.
I'm really intrigued to see Vlad's fluff for this, because it really does look like a crown, and so I'm wondering if he's trying to take his prince title.
Well, is it not confirmed in the little blurb on the model release that he's taken back his princedom?
Yeah.
Well, and so does this mean he's turning against the Empress, or is he going...
No, I don't think... I think she granted it, or... Yeah, I think from in my opinion, what is going to happen is that obviously the Queen has got word that, you know, maybe if she doesn't rein him in, he may well go against her. And she sort of said, you know, here's your title back, here's your lands, you can be the sovereign ruler of this area, just don't try and overthrow me.
People might think she's a bit soft.
Sorry?
People might think she's a bit soft, might try it on for themselves.
Well, to be honest, he has just made it back from capture and torture by the Menites.
It's true.
So he will be a great hero of the Empire.
Just intrigued to see how they go with it. It's going to be interesting.
To be honest, all the fluff for the next book is going to be interesting, especially to find out what the hell happens at Point Bourne. Because that's an awful lot of warcasters in a very small area.
Krios intrigues me as well, and it's a slight digression just from the point of view of he's getting a horse as well, and there's been no story about him.
He's finally on a large base. He's finally on a large base.
This is where they will actually have to sculpt Krios smaller so that he doesn't look ridiculous on the horse.
Big horse. Massive. Mahusive horse.
Yeah.
Big horse.
But going back to Vlad.
All right.
Will this be a Vlad model you'll actually play, Mike?
I'll have to see the rules for... Actually, no, I've played E-Vlad. I've played E-Vlad quite regularly.
I could see me buying this model, my first potential Caedron model, to build and paint it in quite dark colours with a bit of a Sleepy Hollow theme.
See, I was going to say, I reckon some people are going to buy this and do this in sort of cream and purple, because I think that would actually look decent on this version of it. Go with the Menoth theme.
Oh, okay. I'll see that. I thought for a minute you were talking about Lael. I was getting a bit upset there.
No.
I thought you were taking a mick.
That's gold and purple, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's, yeah.
Probably I think we'll find probably some cream in there as well, though.
Yeah. But yeah, yes. Yeah, but that's interesting to go for the Menoth kind of colouring for the, yeah.
The only thing I would say about the model that I don't like is actually the spikes on the horse. And what I might try and do, depending on how how those are sculpted, I might try and remove those, I think.
Well, so he doesn't impale himself.
Well, you know, so if the horse pulls up to a sudden stop, he doesn't end up headbutting a spike.
Oh, he's got his helmet on. Or he's
hard.
Helmetless head, depending on which one you put on.
See, I'll be using the bare-headed version as well.
He's got a bare head as well?
Yes. Absolutely.
Awesome. Great bears and a bare head. Nice.
But yes, that's Vlad. He's awesome. I'm happy. Let's move on.
Indeed.
Well, we've had today a video of...
It's the video insider, isn't it?
Yes, a preview of the next No Quarter. And it was of... Which two people? It was Ed Burrell
and Will Schick.
And Will Schick going head-to-head for the next battle report in No Quarter, but taking Colossals.
Yeah.
Well, Aaron Riddell has to kind of be there, being as he's the one putting it in the magazine.
Pimping it up and lurking in the background.
Yeah. Okay. The lurking thing's a bit weird. But we've learned some very interesting bits and pieces from this. Whether these are intentional reveals or... Whether they just happen to be in the video. Yeah.
I don't think it is. And some of them are. I think they said some things without realizing it went, just leave it in. Because if you listen to any of Aaron's interviews with Lost Hemisphere, he talks about how hard it is for them to keep these things back and how they love them, how they've been playing with them and loving them for so long. They have to go back and censor themselves a lot of the time because they say it and then go, and have to come back.
I honestly think that a company such as PP releases information when they want to release it.
Yeah, that's true.
Before.
They do like doing the long tease for things as well.
There are a few things in there which are obvious, a few things that you have to listen to what they're saying to realise, and a few things that just the camera shots you can see. So...
One of them is a little dodgy and you really do have to sort of squint to go, oh yeah. But.
So should we start with the conquest, Mike?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Whatever.
Well, we can just go with what they've got in common. Both of them are 19 points.
Yeah, it's big, but it's not an unexpected number. I mean, they said 18 to 20, I think, for the, Colossals. So, 19, smack bang in the middle.
So the
that means there's something more expensive.
The Retribution one will obviously be 20.
And also be the worst one.
Yeah, because it has to pay the Retribution tax.
Clearly. But yeah, 19 points.
25 is what I heard the Retribution one is.
I mean, the one thing we should probably point out about this battle is it was one Warcaster... at 75 points.
It was effectively a 50-point game with the Colossals thrown in and a bit of extra support.
Yeah, pretty much. It's
going to be written up in the next No Quarter 42, so do be ready to go buy that.
And it was...
at the end of May, you said as well.
Yeah. And at least on the Kados, a lot of character jacks.
Oh, yes.
But anyway, so they're both 19 points. We know that Conquest is going to be throwing out with its main gun a 4-inch AoE with critical devastation.
Which is awesome. It's like having
gun so happy.
It's going to be two shots as well, isn't it?
It was two shots if you got Harkovich, so for his broadside.
Oh, but you've got... Okay, it doesn't have one big gun though, does it? It has two big guns.
It's a double barrel one on the top, but it's a single turret.
Okay. Oh, the one on the top, sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the weapons on it are AoE. That we do know, that we've been told. Well, if the melee weapons were AoE, that would be hilarious, but no. All the range
weapons. It looked like in the video as well that they were they were laying out kind of AoEs in front of it.
Those seem to be cloud templates.
Yeah.
The idea of having that one big AoE.
But they won't hide it.
Yes, but they'll go nicely on top of the Winter Guard.
True.
Make the Winter Guard Death 19.
Makes me happy.
It's ludicrous. Yeah, it seemed to put down four AoEs that he was laying down. You see him actually lay three, but he's putting the fourth in the hand as the camera shot breaks out.
You also see four later on when they're in front of the Doom Reavers.
Oh, okay. So,
but yeah. And I'm guessing by the way they were laid out, there's a minimum distance between them or something similar. Yeah. But we know it's pumping out smoke. We know it can pump it at a fair distance as well, judging by some of the shots. So that's going to be a very useful tool. Already I'm thinking, 19 points might be too cheap.
I've already seen somebody who's written a P-Butcher 50-point list, and I'm like, what? You don't even know what it does. And they're just like, this'll work.
We don't need to. We know it's got Thresher, and we know it pumps out clouds. Really, there's very little else we need to know as Kador players.
Yeah.
I can't remember if there was anything else really revealed about Conquest after that.
We saw the card.
Oh, we saw the damage grid, which
but
was
only the damage grid of it.
62 boxes.
Yeah, which 62 is, damage.
But we do know we can be pretty certain that is going to be the highest from the
most likely record. 62 damage boxes, six of which are its superstructure system, six of its left arm, six of its right arm, 12 cortex boxes, and 8 movement boxes.
Yeah. Oh my god. I mean, two maulers charging it's going to have trouble taking that out.
And it's also very nicely spread out all the way across both cards, it's like trying to take out the movement on a Crick's Arc node in one hit. It's like, have I got the movement yet? Nope, there's another three columns of movement to go. Curses. But yeah, it looks nice so far.
Painted up in the nice cream and red.
Yes, I do think that actually does look better than the studio scheme.
That was Will's.
Apparently, no one else has an opinion.
I like that scheme. It's a nice scheme. I think it's quite forgiving. The scheme, it does. It looks very very visually effective.
I think one of the things is that I just don't like the studio scheme. If I'm honest, it's got Kador red, but it's too red.
I'd love to have seen JTY's paint scheme on it, but that'll not happen now.
You can look at pictures.
Will he be tempted back?
I love that on that, you mean? Yeah.
I think
it's... Should you try and pay him a commission to paint it?
Yeah. Some very large bundles of notes required for that one.
Or a car.
Or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Conquest. We also saw Kraken.
Is that a joke?
Release the Kraken. The amount of times I have seen that joke since the release of the name of that colossal.
What, my joke or their joke?
Release the Kraken.
Oh. Well, it's not...
It's one of those things. It's almost as bad as... arrow in the knee, frankly. It's getting to that level of annoyance.
Arrow in the knee. Nice.
Doesn't help when you turned on a podcast earlier in the day and that joke was in the first 30 seconds.
Oh dear.
So, but yeah, it's, Kraken does things.
Kraken.
It's speed 5. It's
ruining my own little private con name, I tell you that.
Well, tough cut.
Crack on, lol.
No, it was Crack and Con was the little kind of silly little gaming weekends that I used to do. I can't do that anymore.
Not called Crack On, then.
I don't live there anyway anymore, so it doesn't really work.
Moving on.
We said it was 19 points already. Speed 5, he talks about putting Infernal Machine on it to make it speed 7. And while
that's a 10-inch charge.
He does also hint while he's doing that it's going to have more than normal reach. So,
the kind of reach that thing has on it, to quote him exactly.
Guessing it's going to be something more akin to the Rest Assassin.
Yeah. four inch reach,
yeah.
When it, during activation, yeah.
Yeah.
Those chain, was it the big chain things, aren't they? So it's a similar kind of idea.
Yeah, the big tentacles come out, so they can go to, just like the Legion Battle Engine and the Assassins, yeah. So that could be quite nice on there. Also talks about corpse tokens to boost strength, whether he means to boost the strength or
just
means
to boost, to
buy and boost and things like that.
I think that's going to be buy and boost kind of territory.
Which could be quite interesting if it can hold 3 focus and 3 corpse tokens.
Yeah, it'll make everyone else cry. Again.
I think that's the kind of meat fueled element, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the other thing we saw was its gun had an AoE, and we saw Ed measure it, and he measures 12 inch out on it, which is caught on the camera.
He measures 12 inch out the middle of nowhere while aiming at a Doom Reaver, which suggests that he came up short and 12 is the maximum range of that gun.
Yep.
So, which, for something the size of that gun, 12 inches, doesn't really seem an awful lot, but then again, this is Crix.
Does Crix have access to snipe? No, okay. I was just being sure. I'm sorry.
So I'd make that clear.
You played Crix. How dare you?
Not for very long, and I didn't look at their guns. They don't have guns.
Oh, well, they do have one of the best ranged units in the game. The Nis.
The Nis, yeah.
The Nis don't need snipe, but wait, they do.
Yeah.
They don't need it, they just like it.
Makes everyone else cry. I can't remember what else we learned about Kraken.
That was there.
Wasn't too much about Kraken, was there?
No.
Ed was a lot more guarded with his words.
It was mostly, a meat-fueled behemoth, go.
All looks a bit dull to me, Kraken, not interested.
We did see it get charged by the behemoth, so we could probably guess that ends badly.
It was not just the behemoth, it was the stack of 3 focus that was coming along behind the behemoth. It's like, this could go nowhere good. Especially if that's feat turn. That's just going to hurt. That's going to go nowhere pleasant. Okay. I think that's the news done.
Wow.
I know. It's a mammoth amount of stuff to cover. We've just literally...
Mammoth?
No, we're not talking about the mammoth.
No, I'm not. None of it's Space Corn. Or ever did.
No.
One other little bit. We have the release date for the Colossals. Well, release month for the Colossals book.
Fantastic. We already did.
Did we know it was July?
Yes, okay. We've had the release month for the book since the convention.
TempleCon.
February, yeah.
I always forget the name of TempleCon. I don't know why.
Do you want to talk about your Iron Fang Pikeman rebox, Mike? You know you do.
No, not really. But I'll talk about it briefly. They're repackaging the Iron Fang Pikemen into a single box, all 10 of them.
And we are getting a UK release of the Black Fang, the Black Dragons.
What?
That's what was posted up on TWF. Cerberus are going to be getting some, so.
I assumed it was a troll.
It would be nice if we did get them. I'm not holding out a whole lot of hope, to be honest.
But yeah, they looks as though we're getting a UK release of them, so we're rumoured to be getting them, and then some little bird has said that it might be this Wednesday.
Fair enough.
Bird.
An undisclosed web store.
Undisclosed bird.
Moving on. So, we thought we'd talk to you this episode about what we've been doing gaming-wise since SmogCon. Because, you know, we would have to think of a topic otherwise, and frankly, that's just too much effort.
We did try and think of a topic. We just got nowhere.
We thought of topics, but then we realised, no, that's going to take a full podcast. Yeah, it just all seemed like effort, frankly.
So we're just recording half a podcast tonight, then?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, Nick, as this topic area is your idea, should we start with you?
Yeah, we can do. So... SmartCon was in February, right? So it's currently April, so that's 2 months. What have I done for the last 2 months?
Played LOL?
Well, actually, yeah, a lot of the UK Hordes and War Machine are now on LOL. We were playing with Liam the other day, and Matt Hart's joined us, and JD Whitey's joined us. So, you know, when are you guys getting on? Anyway.
I'm already on there. I just happened to be, what's that word? Busy, yes.
Myself and Mike took a small little break from Hordes and War Machine to try out Malifaux.
Which was fun.
Which was pretty fun, and I think we're both going to be playing that a bit more in the future. Not full out or anything, yeah, but it's nice...
I don't see myself adding sort of, you know, 200 quid's worth of models and going, yep, oh God, there no. we go. It's
I think I've bought all I want now at this point, and I can't... I bought Seamus, and I've bought some stuff that goes with him, and I have no intention of going any further with it.
I might add a couple of bits more to Rasputina and a couple of bits more to Kyrus, and then draw a line under it unless we sort of, you know, play a lot. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Snape. How are you doing back there?
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I don't like to join the Snape camp, but
We've also looked at going back into Infinity. We've just not had a chance for that yet.
The models are still sat there in their own case.
Yeah. We just need to remember. I think we need to go back and relearn the rules and remember how many points we were playing at.
It's going to be basically, I'll take a force of Ghulams and you'll take a force of whatever the basic Highlanders are.
And werewolves.
We sit there with the rulebook going, okay, so we now roll some D20s, right? Yeah. How many?
I was talking to JD Whitey the other day and he was swearing at me. I was like, why? He was like, airdropping werewolves is the most disgusting thing ever. And I'm just like, what? I haven't even played them yet. Yeah. So back onto Hordes and War Machine. I haven't actually had that much table time with them in the past couple of months. I've had a few games at club. And that's been about it. Most of my games have actually been on Vassal, where I've been playing very, very regularly with Jack Thraves. He's been trying to settle not only on lists, but on faction for Masters. And I think he's gone through Menoth, Scorn, Legion. He's got the Stanford
syndrome. Yeah, I was going to say, did you give him the John Stanford patented faction die? which apparently has all sides other than Signar worn off some days, so he has to make a new one.
So I've had to beat him down into playing the one faction and told him he can't change his mind anymore. And we've just been playing, and I've been ironing out my three lists for Masters via that, because I'm not going to Welsh. There's no pressure on me to get them ready yet. And that's been about it. Just playing digitally with Jack.
That sounds so much more creepy than it needed to be. Thank you, Nick. moving on. Alex.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
So besides running a tournament, things. Alex.
yeah, well, I am. Obviously,
Alex doesn't play War Machine anymore.
No, he ran a tournament, though. He told us all about it. Do you not remember?
I remember all too vividly.
When was that, Alex?
First of April. So that was a little while ago now. The pre-Masters bash-up. I ran that. That was a good success. And since then, I've been playing a little bit. I've been getting down to the Northwest Gaming Centre in Stockport. Did a little bit of a 15-point Mangled Metal tournament last Wednesday. It was quite fun. Just a bit of a change of pace, really, from sort of the standard 50-point steamroller that's obviously used to in the run-up to Masters, and I think that's going to be it's quite good to get that break. I'm really just sort of painting like a madman at the moment. I'm trying to get one of my lists painted for the Masters. Should I maybe get entered into the Golden Thrall? I'm not sure if I'll get it done, but I'd like to at least have a painted army in time for the Masters. So, yeah, painting a Wormwolf Stalker as we speak.
Hang on, is this the Stalker?
This is the Stalker.
This is number 3, I think.
So it's currently some painted legs.
No, most of the skin is done. I think the only skin I need to do is on his sword arm. That's we got damaged. The primer on the sword got damaged when I originally sprayed it, so it had to be stripped and reprimed. That's never really been touched since, But yeah, that skin needs doing, a few bits of fur, and then it's just the leather and the armour that need doing.
See, what will happen with this labour of love that's lasted so long? You'll finish it, you'll put it down the table, you'll stand back a couple of paces and go, nah, I don't like it anymore. Strip the lot and start again.
What I thought you were going to say was, you'll get it out, you'll sort it out, and then you drop it in the copper.
Yeah, that's probably more likely.
To be fair, I did have something similar with the Steelheads. Just getting ready to do the dull coat on them, took them outside, got them all nicely lined up, and like, right, I'll just take this one over here to dull coat it, and behind me I heard the wind catch under the box that the rest were in.
I think that's called doing a Conrad.
And they just scattered themselves all the way across the patio. And there's that stuff. Oh, sod.
Conrad's labour of love of the last, well, little while now, has been his
the last guard. 12 years.
And, yeah, and I've heard him on Skype drop for those models more than twice. Quite a reasonable distance as well. They are finished now, I believe, but anyway, yeah, slight digression.
Yeah. So, anything else to add to that, Alex?
No, not really. Just painting and trying to get a few games in and putting the old blog post up, really. That's all I'm going to do.
Beating Andrew Galea with killboxes.
Yeah. I think we discussed that in the last episode, didn't we?
Yeah.
Kurt, have you played your game yet?
No.
This is because Kurt is lame.
Is it, so you're going to go lazy there? Either way, it's all good.
Yeah, it's little column A, little column B, you know.
Bit of C, bit of F.
No E.
No E, I'm not that lucky.
Well, anyway, should we move on to your gaming life, Kurt?
I didn't do much gaming in March to speak of, or painting. I withdrew from the whole kind of concept for a little while. And unfortunately, that put back my painting schedule, which was especially my white trolls, quite dramatically. So now I'm having to step it up at quite a reasonable pace to get get the armies painted that I wanted to.
Is this your painting schedule that's sort of in A2 format on the wall, colour-coded?
No, it's in my head. Okay. I don't go that far. No, I don't spend more time doing the schedule than actually doing the painting, no. I can see what you did there.
Yes.
No, it's good. I'm playing a full unit of Cruel Warriors in a minute. Obviously playing Trolls and taking Trolls to the Welsh Open and Masters. Did get a lot of compliments on my White Trolls at SmogCon. Painted army level, and thinking, yeah, I really would like to try and have 50 points to put forward. The problem is I don't have that much, and I didn't realise how far short I was falling until a few weeks ago. So rattling through, got a bomber nearly finished, a pyre troll I'm experimenting with, and a unit of Cruel Warriors to rattle out to. I've kind of done my painting table at the same time, haven't I?
Yeah. Gaming. Talk about it again later.
Yeah, gaming-wise, got a few local games in against a few mates and practicing the list that I've been working on for the last few months. I'm playing in the local league in a little local shop in town. Which is 35 points. I've been sort of cutting down my 50 to 35, you know, taking the essence of my 50 points, but trying to run sort of an idea of a practice for those. But it's been good fun.
Okay. Fair enough.
That's about it, really. I haven't been to any tournaments that I can think of since ModCon. Not at all. Bit rubbish, really.
Well, I was going to say, I've taken aside from a couple of games, which have been at a very small local tournament where my mercs kind of got some of their earliest proper outings as a full army. Other than that, I've been taking a bit of a break from War Machine myself. Had a couple of games in Malifaux against Nick, where we sat there going, so what does this do? Hang on, I'll just open up the card and there are things and numbers, and what does this mean? Lots of flicking back and forth in the rulebook going, no, seriously, terrain can't work like that. Which was fun. In total, Malifaux seems to be interesting, just very, very different from War Machine, which is kind of what you want from a game you play when you board a War Machine, to be honest.
Because it's there about Infinity, I think, as well.
Well, yeah.
Not that I play much of that. I'd like to, but yeah.
Infinity is certainly very different in the case of, okay, I pop my head out, I'm 60 inches away from everything else on your side of the table. That's fine, I'm just going to pick up a bucket of dice, roll it, and oh look, the thing that popped its head out is dead.
Yep.
Oh well, that worked well.
Great.
I think the worst game I've had so far was when someone actually did just come piling down the side on a motorcycle and took out my entire force in one turn.
Well, it'd be Ching then. Yay.
was just sitting there going, okay.
Yeah, he's all his orders on one bike.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
And I'm just there with golems that can't hit him back. Anyway, before we go into areas that people listening to this podcast are going, huh? Well, no, seriously.
On our first episode.
Try Infinity, it's good.
On our first episode, we did say that we will divulge and talk about other systems.
Well,
we
yes.
We just haven't got Border War Machine yet.
Well, we have, just quietly in the background. Now, other than that, I've given Dave a game of Kings of War, which is one of my secret kind of love games. Big blocks of troops, cavalry. It's good stuff. Just no one plays it.
Is that because Games Workshop don't have their evil grip around it?
Well, here's the thing. Here's an example of why I think it's a really, really fun game. It was the first game Dave had ever had. By turn two, he had learned all the rules. It's like a 20-page rule book. You need about four of those to learn how to play quickly. And from then on, it's just buckets of dice and, oh God, you killed my dragon.
When I came over, he was laughing like a madman. But I think he had just decimated your force.
Yeah, that was largely because he sent gargoyles round the side and gone om nom nom through all of my units.
And then you'd set up this perfect flank charge and he'd put evil terror things in the way, hadn't he, or something?
No, that was the gargoyles again. They flew over the top of my spearmen and went, we will land here. Leaving me going, oh, well now. And that was pretty much it. But then again, it's a war game. Dave is bound to destroy me. That's pure and simple how Dave works.
On the subject of different war games, though, one thing that is kind of making a comeback at the moment that looks quite interesting is Confrontation.
Really?
Yeah.
I've heard some.
Oh, is that the Confrontation? Was it Rackham?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not. It's apparently it's the license has been picked up by the guys who have Dust Warfare.
Yeah. Well, it's the whole thing was picked up. They're slowly re-releasing the models because the original molds were kind of taken out back and destroyed.
Some of them were.
The greens, however, stayed around. They've been remastering them. I don't know if they're going to come in that the original sort of presentation boxes, because having seen those, they were some fairly luscious stuff.
Oh yeah, a lot of the old Confrontation stuff was gorgeous. It was,
yeah,
I mean, I've got tons of it ferreted away in the loft. So I'm quite excited.
I sold mine not that long ago. All my alchemists.
Yeah, I'm quite excited about that. It should be quite good, because that was one of the kind of the first alternative games that I ever got into, sort of out of Games Workshop. It was into Confrontation sort of many moons ago.
I was going to say, Alex, if you got the original models, you actually missed the point where you could have sold them for an absolute fortune on eBay and bought the new ones much cheaper.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just kept hold of them because I love them. Awesome miniatures. Oh. One day I hope that, I don't know, it'll never happen, but one day I hope to be able to paint them.
Yeah, so one day I will have the time to paint this. It's like, no.
Wrong.
Never will. But I suppose, yeah, if you're willing to go the route myself and Kev have gone, then you will have the time to paint whatever you feel like. It just won't look quite as good. But I think,
yeah,
I think
dipping a Confrontation model would be a bit sacrilege.
That would be the point at which, you know, people would turn up at your door and take away your painting license.
French people.
Yes. I would just be Roman from Beasts of War. I'm sorry, but I must take your license.
Do you think he'll have that pot of gravel that he did a review on with him?
Now, don't be mean to Roman.
He just reviewed a pot of gravel.
Is it a pot or a packet of gravel?
Well, a pot thing of gravel, I think. Oh. I don't know.
I was going to say, it's an important distinction.
Only for me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we've exhausted our recent game time experiences. So it's probably a good time for everyone to go and have a bit of a break. So we'll see you on the other side.
So welcome back to the second half. Obviously, we've been talking about our gaming experience in the last couple of months. We're going to bring something back now that we've not had on for a good few months now, which is Spelling It Out, which is some of the earlier listeners may remember our look at a particular Warlock or Warcaster spell list. So what we like about it.
Earlier listeners, we've only had about 15 episodes at this point.
Well, so. I think there's been a good sort of 5 or 6 episodes that we've not, even more maybe, that we've not had it on. So if you're not listening to the first few, you might not be aware of the feature.
Well, I think just to point out for people, there is an archive of these shows that, you know, you can go back and listen to the early stuff. Most of the content is still relevant.
Definitely. But yeah, basically the Spelling Out segment is where we look at a particular Warcaster or Warlock, look at the spell list, what we like about it, what we don't like about it, what works well with them, and just generally have an overview of the Warcaster or Warlock in question. This episode we're going to look at Kruger the Stormwrath, which is the prime version of Kruger. We're going to look at what spells he's got, what we like, what we don't like. We'll start at the beginning with the first spell, which is Chain Lightning.
Don't we normally start with the feet? No, we don't, do we?
That's no. We can go in any order we like.
Start with the feet and work your way up.
It's been so long since we've done this, I'm pretty sure I've listened to the entire back catalogue of Chain Attacks, and now I've just got their way of doing everything in my head.
Yeah. You're just wrong, Nick, in the head. Yeah.
Actually, before we do go into the actual spell, this one thing to note about Kruger is obviously that he has access to Wald Wardens, which have the Geomancy ability, which allows him to cast one of his spells with cost 3 or less for just being forced for 1 fury. So,
obviously, filth.
It is fairly filthy, but I think we need to kind of bear that in mind while we're talking through this list, and we may well sort of refer back to that. This first spell, Chain Lightning, is a prime candidate for Geomancy.
He does have some cool things, like his weapons as well.
Yeah,
we need to talk about those. I'm sure we do.
Well, we'll maybe have a look at those at the end, see sort of how much time we've got left, and we can.
I was going to say the Geomancy Chain Lightning interaction works even better with one of the spells that are lower down the list, but we'll get to that at that point.
Yeah. But Chain Lightning, the spell itself is cost 3, range 10. It's no AoE, power 10, non-upkeep spell, but it is offensive. Basically, a model hit by Chain Lightning suffers a power 10 electrical damage roll, which is nice enough on its own, but then lightning arcs from that model to D6 consecutive additional models. The lightning arcs to the nearest model it is not already arced to within 4 inches of the last model it arced to, ignoring this model. Each model the lightning arcs to suffers power 10 electrical damage roll. So basically, you hit a model and you roll a D6. And if there's a model within 4 inches of the original model hit, you hit that one. And depending on how many you roll the D6, you carry on going, and each one has to be within 4 inches of each other, and you go to the nearest model, friendly or enemy.
That's 4 inches of the last model hit.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
four inches of the original model hit.
Yeah. I actually had a game where this spell took out, before it even taken my first turn, it took out a Manhunter, 4 Widowmakers, and the Marksman.
Yeah.
Against Stanford at FQD.
No, this was just a friendly game. It's the one game I've played with Pete Ladd.
I played against a Crix Tier 4 Egaspi and managed to take out Banelord Tartarus and a minimum unit of Bane Knights in one turn with it, which is quite effective.
Yeah,
that was the first turn.
It sounds like you were rolling as well as Jim rolls against me and my cavalry, where he kills them in with Power 10s. What hit? It's like you get.
I mean, the Power 10 is very effective. I mean, it auto kills Nis. Obviously, if you can maybe, because one trick to do is to move something up, like a Shifting Stone, for example, that, you know, is armor 18, so the Power 10 isn't going to do too much against it. It can then sort of arc onto other higher defense models, such as Nis or Kaize. Again, Kaize at armor 11 are essentially auto killed.
It's just quite good to, you can do it on lightning immune things. It's a very Signar trick that he's picked up here.
Yeah, yeah.
You hit magic immune things with the chains?
Because you tend to find that I know Doomweavers can't be targeted by spells, but obviously they're not being targeted.
Yeah.
No. So
I don't know about the spell ward. I think that is spell ward, isn't it, that they have? They
just it is,
yes.
So I mean I'm not for 100%, but from what I understand.
No, it doesn't target, so it just cuts straight through.
Which means you can use it to chew through precursors and Doom Reavers and things.
It's not so great against kind of the Menoth stuff, Knights Errant and things like that.
That's because they tend to be quite high armor.
Yeah. And there's certain like stuff that is just immune to the effects of spells and what have you. So there's certain stuff that it doesn't work as well against, but generally speaking, it just clears infantry like a dream.
I think from the wording as well, it does get around the certain things that have responses to attacks.
Yeah.
Because everything past the initial thing isn't an attack.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's it.
That's a horrible spell.
It is. And particularly when you do have the Geomancy, and for example, in the 50-point list, you tend to find most people will take probably two World Wardens, maybe a World Warden and Megalith. You know, that they'll have a couple of Geomancy options there, and with as Gallows Grove as well, it kind of gives Kruger that. I mean, Gallows Grove isn't as good as Geomancy because you're still spending the Fury off Kruger, but you know, if you've got that spare point left over at the end of your list, stick Gallows Grove in there.
It's a cheap way to get another angle of attack.
That's it. And it might not last sort of all the way. Sorry, what are you saying, Nick?
There's another spell in his list that he makes him very much want to take a Gallows Grove in his list.
Well, we'll talk about that when we get to it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, Gallows Grove, it might not last kind of the whole way through the game, but early on, if you've got that, if you kind of shift, obviously you've got it advanced deployed, you can shift it that further 5 inches up, move Kruger up a little bit, you've got that kind of, then essentially it could be up to 24 inches of threat range. So if someone's kind of moved sort of far up onto the board, you can get that chain lightning off and all the way back through to the back ranks if they're not careful with the spacing. I mean, that's something that's key if you are facing against P. Kruger is being aware of your spacing and being aware of your placement, because obviously we'll maybe look at it in a little while, these feet as well.
Yeah.
If you can be sensible with your placing, you can mitigate some of the effects. He's still very good, but you can mitigate some of the effects.
Okay. Should we move on to the next one then?
Yeah, you're safe. If anyone's got anything to add. The next spell is...
The only... a bit late. The only other thing that I would add is the number of leaps is particularly high.
Yeah, it can be. It's D6.
Compared to other similar spells where it's D3 or...
Even just one.
Yeah.
you're getting a minimum of two models with every casting. Well, essentially, if you can hit, obviously.
Yeah.
But you two models with each casting.
It's the potential. It's the potential for so many more, though. That's what really does it. It's yeah. the Yeah, sorry.
No, the next spell is Deflection, which is a cost 2, range self, control AoE. It's not upkeepable, it's not offensive, obviously. Basically, while in this model's control area, friendly faction warrior models gain plus 2 armor against range and magic attack damage rolls, and that lasts for one round.
It's great for the first couple turns.
What's that, sorry?
Oh, I said it's magic as well. I thought it was just ranged. Yeah. It's one that Signar have as well. Yeah. Seems very stealing Signar's shtick here, doesn't he? it's a good, decent enough spell, plus 2 armor, yeah. Nothing to be fluffed about for plus, for 2 focuses, 2 fury, I think, as well.
2 fury, yeah. 2 fury. It's good because it kind of, with him, you're going to be looking at taking druids, which, you know, they're fairly high defense, but their armor is somewhat lacking, so it sort of boosts them against the range option, and realistically, they're not going to be engaged if you're getting druids engaged, you're doing it wrong. So yeah, it synergizes well with the sort of armies you're going to be looking to take with him.
Gives him a bit of boost to random pot shots, means you've got to put some proper firepower into him.
That's it. It helps him as well. It sort of helps defeat the ranged assassination threat, really. And I mean, there's another of his spells that we'll come to in a moment that assists that as well, really. He's got a very good spell list.
Once again, Menoth, however, trumps him with their blessed weapons.
Well, there is that. There is that. But...
we have a blessed crossbow. Pyoing.
Blessed crossbow and high armor. That's 2 spells down for us already. Menoth seems to be winning this fight.
Yeah, he's not that great against Menoth. Menoth isn't a particularly great matchup against him, but you can't win them all.
So moving on, next spell.
Yeah, anything else? The next spell is another of his very effective lightning-based spells, which is Lightning Tendrils. Cost 3, range 6. It's no AoE, not a powerful spell. It's not offensive, but it is an upkeep spell. And one thing to note, this spell affects target-friendly models, so it's not even target-friendly faction. It is just friendly models.
A model or unit?
Target friendly model stroke unit gains immunity electricity. Affected models' melee weapons gain reach and electro leap. When a model is hit by a weapon with electro leap, you can have lightning arc to the nearest model within 4 inches of the model hit, ignoring the attacking model. The model the lightning arcs to suffers an unboostable power 10 electrical damage roll.
This is the one I was going to save till later because it synergizes really well with that Geomancy and Chain Lightning, because you can have just a unit spread out at the front and arc 3 Chain Lightnings through them and just watch the infantry on the side fall over.
I do also believe Electro Leap is May. It's not a
yes,
must.
It is. It's a,
so you can choose.
You can have Lightning arc to the nearest model.
So you don't have to fry your own models.
Yeah. Although, to be honest, the unit that's going to be doing it has immunity anyway, but it's... just in case you've got something else of yours close by.
I'd say the prime target for this, though, in my eyes, is Gateman. They've already got reach on the main weapon, so they get reach on their other weapons. So they've got 2 reach attacks. With the Electro Leap, you tend to find they're going to be going against... Or is there a larger base model? They're going to go against sort of bigger units than themselves. I think it just works fantastic. Synergizes really well with them.
Gives their bite reach, which is always quite cool. Yeah. If you have to stay in faction, though, I've seen it work quite well with Bloodweavers.
Yeah.
Because of their gang bonus, and suddenly you can start ganging upon everything.
Well, it's the Bloodweavers, it's not just you've got the Electro Leap, but you can go, okay, that corpse will explode as well. So suddenly it's just an absolute minefield in your front ranks very quickly.
Yeah.
Horrible stuff.
Mm. Yeah. Blood weavers with electro with that charging into a beast that's got some support behind it can make a mess.
Oh yeah, definitely. good against Menoth getting rid of vassals and things.
What else is there? The other one, I played against P. Kruger in the final day of day one on the Masters against Martin Jenkins. I'm trying to think what he put the lightning tendrils on his front line. I think it was the blood trackers with Nuala, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic spell. There's lots of options that you can use it with. I mean, there's no real sort of bad option for it because
there's no downside to that spell, is what you're saying.
More often than not, it's going to go on your frontline troops, so you can chain lightning into the back of them and get your opponent's frontline.
And if you get a couple of extra bonus ones off their melee attacks and the reach, well, you know, that's a bonus.
And with the Geomancer, you can cycle it between units as well quite easily. Obviously, with being an upkeep spell, you can only have it on one unit once. If you wanted to get it between two units, you can kind of have Kruger upkeep it and then one of his beasts geomancy it out later on in the turn.
It just gets worse and worse, doesn't it?
He's teaching us all the tricks tonight.
Can I say, I think I'm taking P. Kruger to the Masters. I should probably stop now.
Sorry, I'm not talking because I'm writing ones down.
Don't worry, I can just bleep this out.
Yeah. Well, the next spell is another defensive spell. Cost two again. Range self. No keep, not offensive. Basically, the model gains plus two speed and defense and flight for one round. A model with flight can advance through terrain and obstacles without penalty and can advance through obstructions on other models if it has enough movement to move completely past them. It's always intervening models when declaring its charge target. And that spell is just good for getting Kruger where you want him, giving him that extra speed early on in the game, late in the game as well to kind of pull back a little bit maybe. And just help keep him safe. Obviously, like you said, Nick, Menoth trumps that a little bit, but a lot of forces are going to... Because, I mean, he's 15-14, so he's got not the best stats, basic, but with the Skyborne and deflection, he goes up to 17-16, obviously 16 against ranged. That's not... Obviously, if you're going to put him in a forest, maybe you're going to get the Wall Gordon's Animus casting that. Obviously, put him in a forest. You know, there are ways of... He's got a lot of options to improve those stats.
It's interesting that they've given him flight on there when he already has Pathfinder, which is quite interesting. Yeah. So he really doesn't worry about terrain at all, and then not to worry about models apart from free strikes is quite cool. Charging through your own stuff. It's just a shame there's no way to give him parry and really, really throw the buck there.
I think that might be an intentional thing.
Oh, wait, there is. There's an Animus.
Is there an Animus out there that gives parry?
The Griffin?
Yeah.
Oh, is that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go.
What about the new Scorn one? Is that as well, isn't it? The flying thing.
I thought the new Scorn one had sprint on it.
Yeah.
I thought it was the Circle Griffin that had the parry.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, that just adds so much to his survivability and positioning. And the point where you get to Def 17, that is horrible because that means most troops aren't going to hit you except on a double six. And even elite troops are going to be hitting you on tens.
Yeah, tens, elevens, it kind of puts it in that range of a bit more than just a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
Luckily for us playing against Circle, it's a self spell, so there's no way Megalith can have it.
No, that's it, because that's one thing to know about Geomancy. Another thing that they can't cast is spells with a range of self or control.
Because that would just be bonkers, Megalith running around with flight.
Yeah. To be fair, that would be the point at which I would have to buy two Megaliths, one normal and one to attach some wings to. I'm liking that idea anyway.
Well, a lot of people do model him running through a field of daisies. So
yeah. I thought the latest No Quarter painting competition, modelling competition, was something with wings.
There you go.
So get going, Mike. Quick, I think it needs to be in by last week.
I will tell you in the painting tab what I'm working on at the moment. So,
well, moving on to the last spell in his list, which is probably the least likely spell you're going to... The spell you're least likely to cast is Tornado. It's all right, but I mean, as we kind of discussed with other sort of expensive cost four spells, such as Obliteration, is the Fury or Focus sync you have to put in them, does it really make them viable options?
Were you not about to quote Admiral Akbar there? I was just waiting for it.
It's a trap. See, I think in the past, Tornado was a trap. For Fury for it, out of Kruger's 7?
Yeah.
Yep.
Is quite high, and means you can't geomancy it. And yeah, I can see where you're coming at from that. But with the Gallows Grove and some of the angles you can get with Tornado now, I have to say that I think there are situations that you will cast Tornado, and I think it is something you always need to keep in mind when you're playing him if you've got those on the table.
I'll be honest about that. I think there are very few occasions where you'll want to cast Tornado where Chain Lightning cannot do the same job.
Yeah,
Mana Wars.
Or better.
Mana Wars.
Mana Wars, you're looking at Armor 7. I've lost the number in my head. Armor 16 plus.
Yeah. But you'll get the collateral off the throw.
With 8 boxes.
You'll get the collateral off the throw. So you're going to be at 3d6 boostable.
It's corner case, though. At best.
Plus, just throwing them back is hilarious, messing with your opponent.
I think in certain cases where something can't be killed, I'd say, for instance, if you're playing against McBain. McBain's feated, there's something on the objective, you need it off. Tornado will do the job.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of that game you had in Ross on Wymyc where the gun mages shot your Cador Jax back constantly. You can use Tornado to the same sort of effect on one big target because it throws regardless of base size. You can just keep throwing Jax further than they can walk.
That is a consideration, but at the same time, you're looking at taking 4 out of Kruger's Fury every single turn.
Yeah, true.
Which for a Spell Slinger, that's dicey. I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those spells, again, kind of like we discussed with other Warlocks, that you'll cast every now and again. You'll find a use for it every now and again, but that it's not one of his staple spells. It's kind of,
I think it will be one of those where you will only use it when you desperately need it, and every time you need it, it will miss.
Either that, or you'll spend six Fury to boost the attack and boost the damage roll because it's only power 13 as well.
And then roll double one.
Yeah.
That'd be triple one at that point.
Well, yeah,
anyway.
Triple one. Anyway. So that's his spell list.
That's the spell list. And obviously we mentioned his feat before. I think it's worth sort of having a look at that as well.
Oh, definitely.
Which basically place 3 AoEs. The spell is called Storm Ravager. The feat, should I say, is called Storm Ravager. You place 3 AoEs anywhere completely in Kruger's control area. Enemy models in one or more of the AoEs when they are placed suffer a boostable power 10 electrical damage roll. During each of your maintenance phases, remove 1 AoE. An enemy model entering or ending its activation in one or more AoEs suffers a unboostable power 10 electrical damage roll. So when you place it, you can boost it. Afterwards, you can't.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's not quite as crazy as it was in Mark 1, but it's still bloody good.
Yeah.
That's basically, I would like this zone, or I don't like that low armored unit.
Yeah.
Really?
Or that low armored unit just isn't coming into this zone.
Yeah.
It's that this low armored unit isn't going to charge me.
Yep. It does. It gives you the options. It gives you a lot of options and a lot of board control.
It's fantastic.
I think, again, it's all about if you're playing against it, it's going to be about the positioning on the other side because having 3 3-inch AoEs, there are places you're spreading out to avoid chain lightnings and stuff like that. And even then, a 3-inch AoE in the middle, you only need to clip things to get the power 10 on them.
Yep.
And it doesn't need to be centered over a model either.
Nope.
Which makes it even worse.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It just rounds him off as a brilliant infantry killing machine.
I think he's possibly the best in the game at killing infantry. Just flat out killing infantry.
He's got all the tools to do it, I think. That's the thing.
He's amazing at killing infantry on his own. He was undoubtedly the best at killing infantry with just him. He doesn't need the rest of his army to do it for him.
Lightning tendrils in there. He does give the army
Stamina
as well.
Yeah, definitely. I just think there are a few other casters out there that can rival him on helping the rest of the army kill lots of infantry.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the obvious ones being things that lower defense, like the Denegras and...
Unless we forget Zakova, come on.
No, go away.
She can give a whole unit -2 death.
So he's got quite a few little tricks in there with his spells, and his feet and everything. And one of the other things, not only can he kill infantry, he's also a one-man assassination unit on Warcasters. Casting Skyborn and then charging something with his sustained attack on his melee weapon.
Yep.
You're charging what? His base speed's 6, 7?
Yeah, six. Goes up to 8.
6 goes up to 8, so you're charging 11 with reach 13.
Yeah.
Through any enemy models or any terrain?
Potentially with parry.
Charging through enemy models might be a bit of a dangerous one because of
freeze. I don't know. I mean, if you take into account most of the basic troopers are going to be mat 5, mat 6, and he's def 17, that's 10s on 2 dice.
Yeah.
It's riskable, especially if you can get that secure.
The thing is, one hit and he's down on stuff like that, so...
They could probably hit him quite hard, but...
Yeah.
But then you've got potential for transfers, so...
We're in a I do this or I die situation, he can throw it down and give it a shot.
Totally.
I wouldn't say throw him forward. He's not a front caster at all.
No. But he has that option there, and that's always nice to have.
Yes, definitely. The number of times I look at Calandra and wish she had a bigger knife.
She gets extra damage when something's damaged. What more do you want?
Oh, yay. Power 9, Weapon Master.
That's what Menoth have? I don't see your problem. No?
Mat 5, I think is what he's referring to.
Mat 5 as well,
but then also, if you're trying to kill anything with Calandra, you're doing it wrong.
If the rest of the army is dead, sometimes you get to that position.
You're still doing it wrong.
Her army's dead, I've lost this game, what do I do with my turn?
You run away. Bugger. Okay.
Advise your opponent on how to rinse his brushes.
Well, what I actually did last time was just try and force blow something to death, and it worked. So, but we're not reviewing Calandra.
No knife. It's not filth. A knife. Filth. It's a filth fight.
Anyway, I think we've pretty much done with spelling it out for this episode.
Yeah, we'll be back next year with some more spelling it out.
I think that all that remains now is to move on to the painting table.
Yeah.
Well, as I practically did my painting table already, I am in the process of painting a full unit of Kriel Warriors in my new white.
Your albino theme?
It's that key word again. New. That's crept back in there, Kurt. Now, come on. You've got to admit it.
You know what? I was trying not to say it as well.
You've got to admit at some point.
It's the new style, which never goes out of fashion. It never becomes old. So full unit of 15 Kriels, and I'm still kind of putting washes on the bomber as well, gradually. He's nearly there. Probably about another 15 washes to go.
The John Webb school.
That's really white. If you're painting white skin, I've yet to find another way of doing it.
Yeah, true. If you want it brilliant white. Without just globbing on the whole thing.
Add a bit of dazzle to your paint.
Yeah, quite you.
Can we fire him from the podcast?
I don't want to be blue.
We're gonna pay for you to have some lessons off John Webb, then you can come back on.
Oh, okay. That actually sounds like a good idea. Can we do this?
Next SmogCon.
Oh, no, I want to play at SmogCon, not that, paint.
That means you've got months with SM lads. No? Okay. So is that you?
That's me done, pretty much. My, the thing I could add is that my war wagon is finally properly completed. The gun plate, the gun shield did turn up, and I've painted it and attached it, and I said that I've probably got a few little bits of highlights to do on it, but it's time to finish.
You can put it on the table and go, this I like.
Yes. Now I've finished this. I don't have to paint that anymore. That's a good thing.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Alex?
I'm currently painting a Warthog Stalker still. Same as it was like 10 minutes ago.
I think it's a bit more than 10 minutes. This recording has warped your mind.
Yes. No, I've finished the majority of the skin. Like I said, I'm working on the leather. It's not going quite as I'd envisioned, so I'm getting a little frustrated with it now. But I'm persevering.
So if before the end of the podcast we hear a smashing noise, that means you've become infinitely more frustrated with your stalker.
No, I don't think I'll be smashing it just yet.
There was some swearing earlier. I did hear that.
Yeah. It's just Alex.
True.
Alex being Alex. Anything else since the last podcast, or have you just been sat there staring at the Stalker, envisioning what
No, I mean, I've actually finished my World Warden, sorry. Not a Guardian, a World Warden. He's all done. He's just needs varnishing now. He's been sat on my desk looking longingly as if to say, come on, get me varnished, then you can get me on the table. So, yeah, I need to varnish him. A little bit more work on his base, and he's ready to go. And then once we've finished recording, I'm gonna go and primer P. Kruger. Let's see, we've just been speaking about him and spelling it out, and he's the it's the list I'm painting is a P. Kruger list.
Okay.
So yeah, hopefully get that done before Masters, as I mentioned before, and I'll be happy.
Sounds good. So, Nick, your painting table.
I can't remember what I talked about my painting table last time. Did I talk about the war wagon and having built the war wagon?
You did not, as far as I remember.
I just talked about Malifaux, didn't I?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I started building a war wagon, which is pretty cool, pretty good model to put together. I just need to prime it now and then put it actually glue it rather than just sticking it together.
Don't try and do it inside a week.
I think I'm going to take my time over doing this. I've also got myself a new plastic diatrol kit and built that into rock, which I've done a tiny little bit of converting work on there. I know the card says that he has a meaty fist, but I decided to give him a bomber keg and put some beer coming out of it.
That works.
Rock with a ranged attack. Fantastic plan.
No, Kurt. Wait, he already has one.
Oh, yeah, good point. It's not going to be tired now.
I've also been painting up Grimm's base, because Grimm's one of my three casters I'm taking to the Masters, and so he needs a nice shiny base.
I like the idea that for everything else, you just leave the base plain and black with like little dribs of paint on from when you've been painting it.
No, I paint my models up on their original bases, and then, well, this being the warcasters and characters, paint them up on the original bases, and then when I'm happy with them, I paint up a proper base for them, take the old base off, and put them onto the new base. Don't see any issue with that.
Fair enough.
So, and then I've also been cracking on with the Fen Blades. A couple of them now have quite a bit more colour on it. I've been doing layers of red on Fen Blades tonight. I think I've put about four layers over these two Fen Blades in the past 3 hours that we've been talking on Skype.
Red is the curse of all painters anywhere
it's
ever.
You can still see the blue underneath it. It's horrible. But I did choose red as my...
Just a small tip. If you're going to paint a red, try and build up from a brown or something like that.
Yeah.
It just makes, even when you're sort of layering on the red, it just means you'll need fewer layers.
Yeah. So, doing those, and I'm also looking at getting started on Edoomy, because he needs some love. So he's been primed, and he's sat next to me, waiting to be done.
Okay. I am contemplating painting another one of him.
Another Edoomy? How, don't you already have two painted?
No, I've only got one.
Have you only got one? I thought you had one before you did the albino one.
I did, but I don't have an albino one.
Did you not do an albino Edoomy?
No, it's P.
Ah. It's it's the Molgs. He's got seven different versions of.
That's the one. Yep. Well, who doesn't have seven Molgs? Let's be honest.
I only have two.
Yeah, I need to actually hand over the second one, don't I?
He's been living with you for quite a while longer.
So, okay, cool.
What about yourself, Mike? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been working with the joyousness that is Dip. I sat down on a Sunday about 3 o'clock with 10 undercoated Forge Guard, and before the day was through, they were pretty much done and table ready. They just needed a quick bit of anti-shine and finish off the basing. Jobs are good. So I've got my dwarves all done. They look quite nice as well, actually. I'm very pleased with them.
A bit short.
Well, yes, they would be a bit short. Moving on, I've started work on my precursors because, well, they're in the Ashlyn list with the dwarves for the Welsh Open. And I've just finished doing the first sort of test dip just to go, do these look all right as they are, or do they need more? And he's come out absolutely beautiful again. So, couldn't be happier with dipping, because at the moment it's just largely undercoat, one or two colours, dip, yeah, that'll do. And it has some quite startlingly good results. It's only going to take you up to a tabletop level, but at the same time it's a great way of churning out infantry units really
quickly. I can't paint above a tabletop level even when I try.
Well, I actually had a discussion with Kev Bryant about this the other day, and we're both saying, well, for units, I could sit there and individually highlight and do this and do that, or I could just dip it. And it's nicely protected. It gets the highlights. It just takes all that frustration out of doing units and means that if you want to, you've got more time to spend on your solos, your jacks, your warcasters, the places where you actually sort of... The bits of painting that are joyful in the main, unless you're painting the original Ashlyn or Pieris, in which case it's like, there's a face here somewhere, I just can't quite find it. So,
yes, I'll be looking at the wrong end like Mr. Padgett.
Best not to ask about that one, I think.
I think anyone who dips can console themselves in the fact that JTY actually dips as one of his stages.
Oh, with his immensely cheap varnish.
You, instead of using natural sort of army painted dip, he uses varnish, Ronseal varnish, and one of his stages essentially is a heavy brown wash.
Yeah.
But it's the same stuff as goes in dip, essentially, really.
Well, I mean, they've just released the sort of an ink version of the dip as well, so if you're using other varnishes, you can now buy what is essentially a very large pot of Devlin mud.
Cool.
Don't say it.
Getting dipped.
It is never being dipped.
Get it done.
Because at this point, I've laid out all my painted Cador, and I went, yeah, this is a pretty decent amount. There's one or two things I want to paint for my Cador to have them sort of pretty much shelved until I go back to playing them properly. But at the moment, it's mercs all the way, frankly. I'm spending a good amount of time getting everything ready and done, and there's a good chunk of the Ashlyn list that's pretty much there. So it's only really solos that I've got to concentrate on now. But yeah. So that's my painting table anyway. So I think we can round out the episode now with handing over to Alex.
Yeah, well, you've been listening to Elite Cadre, the Hordes & War Machine podcast that doesn't take itself too seriously. I've been Alex.
I've been Kurt.
I've been Mike.
And I've been Nick.
And we did that in one take.
Woohoo!
I've always wondered, you know, when we say that we don't take ourselves too seriously, that seems to imply that we take ourselves even a slightly bit serious.
Yeah, well, you have planned lists for Masters.
That's true.
And I've been planning my list for Masters since January.
But I also think that Scattergun is a business.
Let's end it there.
Come on,
good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Been listening to Elite Cadre, a War Machine and Hordes podcast. Email us at elitecadrepodcast@gmail.com or find the whole team on Twitter at bit.ly/elitecadre. Music provided by Martin de Bont and Symphony of Spectres. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Easter eggs.
I like Ed's shirt.
With the purple sleeves. It's really quite nice, isn't it?
To be fair, what Kurt just said actually fits the intro I've written more. Because it says, hello and welcome to Elite Cadre, the Hordes and War Machine podcast that's regularly distracted by shiny things.
I might have to say that if we stop talking about this video in the podcast, I'm going to have to say that I like his shirt. And I might have to write to him on Facebook and tell him I like his shirt as well.
Dear Ed Burrell,
I like your shirt in that video.
I have
no, because it won't fit.
Shirt, but
it won't fit me.
All right, then, dear Ed Burrell, where can I buy a shirt like yours?
Why would it not fit you, Kurt?
Love, Kurt J. Hansen.
Which causes us so many headaches.
I would let you carry on with this, but it's boring.
It is. Yes, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought I'd interrupt you there. The cross-eyed Winter August.
With me.
Who is getting in a sleeping bag?
Alex.
<It's> Alex.
he's given up with crunchy foods and he's now drinking and sleeping on
podcast. Either that, rubbing the microphone up with his shorts.
No, that's fine. There's gravy on the mic.
How much cider have you got?
Not enough.
Oh, damn.
I'm just going to grab a quick drink, 1 second.
Let's wait until he's gone.
What now?
Hello, and welcome to Elite Car.
No, you did it as well. See, I was already with my cutting and you broke it up before I even got that far. Okay. It was quite funny.
What's that?
I tried to do the introduction without you here. I couldn't do it.
To be fair, that was purely for the purpose of the outtakes. I appear to have hurt someone.
Calm.
Are you doing that thing women do when they're trying to sort of, you know,
blow
the tears back into their eyes with their hands?
That was stupid. So do I just now.
You look stupid most of the time, so, you know.
Just take a deep breath and breathe straight back out. You calm yourself down.
And for anyone who's a Kevin Smith fan, dead babies, dead babies, dead babies.
Hey, all your bees.
Are we ever going to start?
We started hours ago.
Yeah,
it was over an hour ago.
This is the actual show this week. It's just going to be us sitting around having a round table discussion of utter nonsense.
I don't mind.
Frankly, I think sometimes it would probably get more listeners. This week we'll be looking at another utter hot...
We almost made it and then he bumped it.
I was so close.
It's the
same thing,
mate.
I'm at all your bees.
I could feel the tension as Mike was waiting to be interrupted.
That's what it was, he was expecting it.
And he got through.
It's the whole thing. I've done, what is it, 15 of these now? And I think I've got one...
Is that all? Is that only 15?
Yeah, this is episode 15.
Well, actually, this is technically our 16th episode, but it will be episode 15. Oh. As soon as I can.
Do you want me to introduce the whole second half?
Well, I'll start. Hey, you can introduce the second half if you like.
Yeah, go on then.
Okay.
And 3, 2, 1. No fucker interrupt me.
God, hold this breath for him, Alex!
Pardon?
I went... And then you went, 3, 2, 1, no fucker interrupt us. I can't hold this breath forever, Alex.
I owe you bees.
Little bees, little bees.
When you're quite ready, ladies, come on. It's your time we're wasting.
Don't know about you.
So, welcome back.
Oh, Alex, just one thing.
Yeah, I knew that was going to happen.
I had to get it in there eventually.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. I came back to building some wards and horn machine stuff and wards.
Some wards and horn machine. Oh my god!
It's past midnight. I'm tired. My brain doesn't work anymore.